Hello. Anyone that listened last week will know that I started off the podcast with a ridiculously hoarse voice and said hello as if I was a way to croak and drop dead. And I almost did exactly the same this week. In fact, this is the third attempt. My throat keeps feeling like it's going to go there. I don't know what's going on. It seems like it's some sort of like Eminem lose yourself style choking that I seem to have as soon as the microphone goes on at the moment. I might need to get this looked at. Who knows? I mean, I don't have a cold or a sore throat or any kind of chest infection or anything, but as soon as that red light's on, for some reason I'm choking. It's very lose yourself. I'm not really a big fan of it, to be honest. I'm a big fan of Lose Yourself, the song. I mean, I'm not a big fan of this this feeling. But I seem to have gotten over it, because now I'm rambling absolute shit. Welcome to Mood Swings. This week, my guest... Well, this is a weird one. I've got a main guest and, like, a sort of side guest slash co-host type person. The person being interviewed in this podcast is Stevie Meikle. He is an ex-Scottish Muay Thai fighter who fought a horde in Thailand. He fought in Max Muay Thai prison fight, Channel 7. I think he fought on Max Muay Thai. I don't know if we actually discussed it and I got that 100% officially, but I'm sure he has. I'm sure he told me he has. And is now a referee, a judge. He hosts seminars on Muay Thai scoring. Just someone that's quite heavily involved in Scottish Muay Thai, certainly in the UK scene, in a big way too. So that was my main guest. And on the side, we had previous guest Pete Scott sitting in. We recorded this at Pete's a couple weekends ago over a few beers. And Pete sat in and took the piss out of us occasionally and occasionally jumped in with questions or to give his thoughts and opinions. So it was quite a nice dynamic, I thought, and I hope you enjoy listening to it. A little bit of admin. We were sat around a glass table and I kept foolishly trying to put my beer down whilst maintaining eye contact with Stevie, who was across from me, and I kept catching the edge of the table. It doesn't sound that bad on the recording. It sounded horrific at the time, and I thought I'm going to have a nightmare editing that out, but yeah, if at any point you get a bash noise, I apologise. It was an error of judgment in terms of where the windowsill was. I really enjoyed this episode. There's quite a lot of sprinklings of mental health chat around it, about how Muay Thai training can affect your mental health, about how it being in, how like in Thailand, how that like affects you. There's a whole lot of stories in there. There's a lot of quite in-depth Muay Thai chat as well about how Thai boxing has changed in Scotland over the years. And yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed recording this one. I could have sat there all night. We did sit there for quite a while, to be fair. And I hope you do too. I am going to come back at the end and speak a little bit about something different. This is a two-parter this week, by the way. And the next part will be up tomorrow or the day after or something. So look out for that if you enjoy this first half. And if you don't enjoy this first half, then you should still listen to part two, because why not? Help me out with the downloads. Okay, cheers. Once again, but I don't know quite how the dynamic's going to work tonight, because I'm meant to be interviewing Steve, but Pete is sitting in as a sort of compere, I suppose.
I'm just making sure things don't get too rowdy.
Okay, well, so Pete's the referee for once tonight. instead of the other way around.
Get your puppets for them.
Anyway,
I'm just drinking beer, listening, like.
Going to interview Stephen Meikle. How you doing, Steve?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
And yes, Pete Scott is sitting in as a hop house and drinking fiend.
Really, I'm just going to try and slack Stevie any chance I get in between it. But
standard procedure.
So, Stevie, how did you first get involved with Muay Thai?
I was at Caledonian University, probably in 2003, and I'd never really done any martial arts before. I'd done karate for a couple of months when I was younger, maybe 10, 12, something like that. For a few months, never really enjoyed it because of how strict it was. I just never really saw the benefits from it at all or enjoyed it. So I chucked that, never did anything. Went to university, I was smoking and drinking, just being the usual student. Not really doing any sort of sports. I think I stopped football when I was maybe 13, 14. I used to play football in goals when I was younger. Quite enjoyed that, but never could be arsed keeping up. And then things like cigarettes and alcohol and going out got involved, so I just chucked everything in and just concentrated on that for a while. Went to university, and then when I was there, I went to the Muay Thai once or twice because they have like a free membership to the university for all the classes. Went to the Muay Thai and quite enjoyed it. And then I was at the gym and working on the cable station, and I dislocated my shoulder and popped out of the socket. So I never really got a chance to go back. Spent 3 months with my arm slung up, not able to do anything. And then I put on a considerable amount of weight after that. It goes up to about 90 something kilo. Really unfit, been still
smoking. Same as your house, Steve.
Same as your house. I'm blaming that on parenthood. And then decided to go back to Muay Thai. Started that, strengthened my shoulder up and get a bit fitter. And really enjoyed it. I was doing it 3 times a week. It was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then started doing it during the day as well, because they had classes in the morning. And that fitted around my schedule for study times and stuff. So I started drinking a few times a week and basically my cunt kicked in for about 6 months, 7 months. And then when the summer came around, I had about 2 months off for doing what I wanted. And the girl I was seeing at the time had gone to America with her folks for a few weeks. So I was kind of left thinking, right, okay, what will I do? So I decided, I'll go to Thailand and see what that's like. Maybe do a bit of training out there. Went to Thailand, went to a place called Rawai, which is a lot different than it is now. It was really just a ring with a sort of wooden hut over it and some toilets at the side, and a bit of sort of fitness equipment in the back. Down a dirt track at the very bottom end of Phuket back in 2004. First few days, I kind of thought, what am I doing here? Middle of nowhere. In a kind of back end of nowhere area, doing a fine sport that I really realised I knew absolutely nothing about when you get there. And within a couple of days, absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Just didn't want to leave, thought it was great, and started to learn a lot. And then came back, and once I came back from that 3 weeks, I was kind of good enough to fight. So I had my first fight in Canvas Line Miners Welfare Club back in 2004, and absolutely hated it. Hated my first fight, thought it was rubbish. I was like, why have I done this? To get into the ring, and it's all very well in training, hitting pads and sparring and stuff, and you're sparring against people you know, so the environment is something you're used to when you're going into the ring. There's nothing really can prepare you for. It's exactly what you do in sparring, but without pads in a different environment. It's exactly the same. But when you go into it, it really messes up your head. Because you're basically standing across from a guy you've never met before, who's wanting to kick your cunt, and it's really weird to see. And I won the fight, but I came out afterwards, my shins hurt, my face hurt, my body hurt, and I felt horrendous. I was like, I've never done that again. And then about 3-4 days later, I started to feel, I think I might do that again. Yeah, it was quite, you know, fun. And then within 5 days, 6 days, I was like, right, I'm definitely fighting again. And then a week later, I ended up fighting down in Leeds. Fought down there, won down there. And then you sort of just kept progressing from that. I would study for a bit and do my exams, and then I'd fight, then I'd study, do coursework, sit my exams, and I was training the whole time.
Yeah.
So it kind of fitted really well around the student schedule. I know a lot of people who don't want to train and fight while they're being a student, but for me it was great. I was working part-time, studying, training and fighting, and it all worked really well.
Yeah. Do you think going out to Thailand so early into starting Muay Thai had like an impact on how much you came to enjoy it and like how integrated with the sport you became quite quickly?
Yeah, I would say so. I think in the UK at that time there wasn't a lot of good quality knowledge about Thailand, about how things are out there, about how the sport really is. There's still a lot of people involved with Muay Thai who were kickboxers, boxers, K1, karate style. I don't really know about a lot. The clinch aspect of Muay Thai was fairly limited. There wasn't really a lot of knowledge about the clinch, about how to prepare properly for a fight. The weight cutting issue was always there, but it's always sort of predominant through most combat sports. But at that time, yeah, there wasn't a great deal of knowledge about how to be a good Muay Thai fighter in the UK, whereas Thailand gave you that option to train consistently, learn a lot really quickly, and become a better fighter. So for me, when I went out there, I really enjoyed it, and I wanted to get back out there as quick as possible. I enjoyed the training here, but I just found I got a little bit more sort of technique and knowledge from Thailand.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed being out there. I really liked the place, so I decided to keep going back.
And how long was it before you went back out to Thailand, and how long was it before you ended up fighting out over there?
It was actually the next year. I went out, there was a really popular K1 sort of, I think called Super League, which was on Eurosport for a while, and it was really all the sort of top 70, 72, 75, sorry 76 kilo fighters throughout Europe, and a couple from Thailand, who were all fighting on a sort of league throughout Europe every month or so, every 2 months or so. And one of them had a gym in the northeast of Thailand, so I thought it'd be great if I go up there, train consistently for a month and try and get a couple of fights.
Yeah.
I went out there and the gym wasn't really what I expected. There wasn't really a heck of a lot of structure to the training. And I felt kind of lost, and I was just kind of wasn't really learning very much. Mm-hmm. And then I got really sick. Gardiasis.
But where was that gym?
It was Ubon, Ole Larsen. I had a gym up in Ubon, which is sort of back and beyond, as you know, in the northeast of Thailand. So I was up there training at his and with one of the guys from Glasgow, and I enjoyed it. I wasn't really learning much. I wasn't really getting any better.
It wasn't a Muay Thai gym. It was more.
Well, it was a Muay Thai gym. They were teaching Muay Thai, but there just wasn't any structure.
That Super League wasn't just Muay Thai, was it? That was K1, was it mostly?
It was K1 over 5-3s. But it wasn't giving me what I needed. I wasn't learning anything at the clinch. I wasn't learning about body kicking or scoring or about Muay Thai. There's only two trainers, and then sometimes they wouldn't turn up, sometimes the guys wouldn't bother training, so it was just ended up just not doing very much. It rained a hell of a lot at the time up there. So then when I finished there, I managed to get sort of fairly fit, went down to Koh Samui, knew that I could get a fight in Koh Samui quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So turned up there a couple of days later, got a fight in one of the stadiums. Now generally when you fight in Koh Samui in Phuket, your first fight is always going to be, you'll win by TKO round two. So when people are out in Thailand and you hear them fighting at Bangla Stadium and they win by TKO round two, you know the guy's taking a dive. 100%. Yeah. 100%. And I thought, right, I'm going to get a guy who's going to take a dive. And then I found that round one, he wasn't going to take a dive. He was a little bit lighter than me. But I trained quite well for it at the time.
Was it a tie?
It was a tie, yeah. He's a little bit lighter, but I ended up, I rocked him in round two. Never knocked him down, but then won points. I remember my shins hurt like hell after that fight. I never felt pain like it. Came out and was just absolutely throbbing. And I went and sat and chatted to the guy afterwards a little bit in disjointed English. Both icing our shins up afterwards. And just after that point, I sort of fell in love with the sport. And then I walked across the bar to get a pint. And rattled my shin, my sore shin, off the little metal pole that sits under the bars. Almost started crying. And then went to Fairtex for the last sort of 4 or 5 days. After that, we spent a few more days in Kosmui. Then went to Fairtex for 5 days and found that Fairtex was the place I wanted to go back to. Because they had structure, they had good fighters, they had a proper training camp.
Was this just a 3 week holiday as well?
No, that was 2 months I was there.
This was your second time in Thailand, it was 2 months, right?
Yeah, second time in Thailand, so a month in Ubon, and then I think it was 14 days in Koh Samui. It was six weeks. About 10 days in Koh Samui, and then 4 or 5 days at Fairtex after that. And that was the one in Bangkok, and that was great, loved it. It was just a great gym. There's all the motivation, those guys sitting around there making sure you're training. Making sure the trainers are training you properly, they're all motivated. It's just like a good environment to train. So I thought, right, I'm definitely going to go back there. And I think it was my memory's quite hazy about a lot of things. I blame that on the ME.
Or the elbows to the head.
Yeah. But I think it was the next year I went back out for another 2 months and had 2 fights for Fairtex. 2006, yeah, probably would have been 2006. Had 2 fights for Fairtex and Pattaya. That was great. Loved it being there. I mean, I was still training in Glasgow and fighting in the UK and training in Glasgow. And then I think that was the final year of uni, and then I came back from that trip in Thailand, and had a Scottish title fight and I won that, so I'd gone 12 fights, 12 wins, unbeaten.
Who was that fight against, that title fight?
It was Andy O'Brien. Doesn't fight anymore. It was meant to be fighting Stevie Houston, but he pulled out with a broken rib, allegedly. So I ended up fighting Andy O'Brien, who seemingly caused his broken rib in sparring. Stopped him like in the 5th round, elbows, knees, can't remember. And then after that, I moved down south to work, which was a really, really bad move. Went down south to Suffolk to work down there.
Okay.
It was terrible. Basically living in a really small town, couldn't really do very much Muay Thai. The only Muay Thai I could do was to travel about an hour and a half to Southend to train at Munkhorn Dam with the guy Jason Wooden, who's now retired, living in Dubai. I would train with him a couple of times, maybe twice a week, and then come up to Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
Basically train in Glasgow, so I end up getting a credit card for $3,000, paying for flights to Glasgow every weekend. I miss Glasgow as well, I missed civilization. There isn't really much going on apart from farmers and
yeah.
Small towns and pubs, so I got kind of bored, came back up. It didn't really work out very well. I ended up having to lose all 6 kilos in the sauna, and then got knocked out for the first time at my 13th fight against a guy called Denis Faraxa, who from Belarus, who did about 130 fights.
You fought him in your 13th fight?
Yeah, I didn't realise he actually had that many fights until I got into the ring. I heard him announce how many fights he's had. I thought, oh fuck.
Do you think there was a point between like the 2 and the 0?
Yeah, yeah. I thought, sure it's not a win. 3 losses. But no, it wasn't. But it didn't put me off. I still loved it, but I was still living in Suffolk. And I remember having to defend my Scottish title about 6 months after that. And I, just, I couldn't be arsed. I hated where I was living. I was quite sort of depressed about where I was living and what I was doing. I was making decent money, but I just never really bothered training for it. So I continued just not really doing very much. I think I went for like one run a week and went for maybe two training sessions a week, max.
So what was you doing working?
So I was working for a car company that does like all the components for cars.
Well, like in the workshops, I think.
No, I was like logistics manager for it.
Oh, okay.
Well, sorry, trainee, graduate logistics manager. So I was doing that and then training once or twice a week, with still going at the weekend, having a couple of drinks, smoking all the time and stuff. Not really cutting weight the way it should be.
What, even before the fight?
Aye, a week before the fight.
A week before the fight.
So it was Rad Burt, was my fight. And I was only getting paid like 300 quid. I was like, I don't care. But I thought, you know what, it'll be fine. All I'll do is get a bit fair close towards the fight. So I kind of stepped up about a week or two before the fight. But I never really stopped smoking or drinking. I just kind of continued with that. Cause I just didn't really care. I felt quite bored with the whole thing.
Yeah.
And where what I was doing. So it came to the week of the fight, and I thought, right, I'm going to step up a little bit. Try to step up, realised I wasn't that fit, and I was like, oh, it'll be fine. I came back up. I had to weigh in at 67 kilos, stepped on the scales, and I was 74.2. I was like, oh, shit.
So was that the day before the weigh-in? Or?
That was the day before the weigh-in, so around, 24 hours before the weigh-in. So I was like, oh, Christ, right, okay. So I had to jump in the sauna, lose, I think I lost about 3 kilos, and then drunk like a bottle of water, so put on half a kilo, woke up in the morning, I'd lost that half kilo, went back to the sauna, lost another 2 or 3 kilos, felt done in, so came out of the sauna, I said, right, I'll go back in the afternoon, because the weigh-in wasn't until 6, went back in the sauna in the afternoon, lost another 2 or 3 kilos, checked my weight, and I was right, okay, I'm 67.8, or something like that, around that late 67s. So I thought, right, that should be fine. I'll sweat off at least 0.3 in the car. I'll be the right sort of weight, and then I'll come weigh in. I got there, and I was 68.2 or something. Okay. Sorry, 67.6 or something. And they said, no, you need to be down a bit lower than that.
Yeah.
So to go back into sauna for the fourth time, ended up getting down to 66.9 or something. So overall, I dropped from like 74.2 to 66.9, which I think works out at like seven something kilo. So,
I don't know, it's all just numbers I'm hearing, so.
It's like trying to work out the Prince of the Age again.
I guess 7 kilo, and I felt just, I felt awful. But I thought, I've done it this far, I'll just take the fight. In hindsight, I shouldn't. And all the problems I've had with fights have always been through excessive weight cutting.
Yeah.
Not the drinking and smoking a week before.
Maybe a little party to that. But yeah, just if your head's not in the right place for a fight, Muay Thai is the sort of fight you can't do half-assed. You need to be fully committed and focused to it, or you don't do it. And sometimes you can get into the habit of just going through the motions rather than actually wanting to fight. So yeah, I lost my points in that fight, lost my title, it just looked crap. So I decided to take a bit of time off after that, quit my job, moved back up to Scotland, stayed here for a good few months, had a couple of fights, and then went to Thailand, trained at Vertex again for 2 months.
Did you find it quite easy to get back in the training once you were back up in Glasgow?
Yeah,
just back into it.
Just like riding a bike.
Was you training at the then? Was it
Greenhouse? In Glasgow, yeah, well, I've always trained there, yeah.
But so was it not Caledonian Uni? Yeah, Uni when you first went?
When I first started, it was Caledonian Uni, so we trained at the Uni, and it was just basically pads and people with shin guards and gloves and stuff. There was no bags, there was no ring or anything, it was just mats.
At the same, actually in the Uni?
In the Uni, yeah, okay. The sports hall. There's a big sports hall there called the Arc, and train in there. So there'd be sometimes class at 10 in the morning, 9 in the morning, so go and train that, and then train in the evening as well sometimes, depending on what uni commitments I had. Then by that point, we moved to a smaller gym in Mary Hill. That was pretty small. Then we moved to a bigger gym, which is the one they're still in just now.
It's still not far from Mary Hill, is it?
Aye, it's the corner of...
What area is it?
It's kind of back of town, Postle sort of area.
So who was it? It was the guy around the open day?
So you ran kind of doing Muay Thai and then opened the Grip House. And that's where everything from the gym's been based ever since.
Oh, okay. I did also wonder, because some people still call it Caledonia Muay Thai, do they? But it's...
Yeah, well, there is still a Caledonia Muay Thai class, and we do have a Strathclyde Muay Thai class, and they basically are feeder gyms for
the Grip House. Grip House is the actual name of the whole gym, is it?
Yeah.
Because then you've got like the Dinky Ninjas they train there as well, do they? They used to, or no?
No, that's kind of a complicated setup.
The actual gym's called the Grip House in the fight.
Yeah, so Paul McVeigh and James Doolin were the Dinky Ninjas, and they basically ran the MMA for the Grip House, and then James Doolin went off and performed higher level, which is now where the Dinkies train, but there's still some of the Dinkies that train at the Grip House. And Paul McVeigh doesn't teach anybody anymore. He just, well, he teaches jiu-jitsu a little bit, trains jiu-jitsu, but doesn't do the fighters, so Dean Riley now trains the MMA fighters at the Grip House, and Guy does the Muay Thai side of it. So yeah, no, going back to Glasgow was the best move for me. Just mentally felt a lot better being back there. I wasn't really earning very good money, because I was working, went from working as a logistics manager to working in a restaurant serving sandwiches. So it was a bit of a step down, but I'd saved up a decent amount of money from working. But I felt a lot better. Living down there was quite depressing. It was a bit shit.
Do you not want to start your own Muay Thai gym in just like a farm shed or something? Put up a bag in a barn and just
like it down and stuff like
that.
Yeah.
In no. You need to have access to people who are around you who want to train. When you take a gym to a sort of remote location, you need to have access to people who want to do that sort of sport. Down there wasn't really the best place for it. A few years later, I went to Australia, based myself in Perth. I was kind of looking for a job in the mines at the time. And when I was there, I was working, doing labouring stuff, putting up construction fences around construction sites, and I was training at a gym called Riddler's, really good gym, but I was also training at a gym called the Pit, which is where Toby Smith trains. And his dad basically said, look, you can train here, blah blah, we'll get you fights, and really nice guy. And his gym was basically at the back of his house.
Right.
And it was brilliant.
Was Toby Smith there when you was there?
No, he was away in Thailand. But he actually had his own room at the back, you know, right beside the ring and stuff. So it was pretty cool. They had one ring, they had an area, a matted out area, tin shed, everything. So because the show was really warm, it was great. You could just train outside, being nice and warm like it was in Thailand.
Yeah.
It was just like being back in Thailand. It was great. Loved it. But opening a Muay Thai gym, I don't know, I'm still kind of undecided on that.
Oh, is it something you're considering for...
I've been toying with the idea of it, but I keep going yes and keep going no, yeah. Yes and yes, no. So at the moment it's a no, simply because I've got family now. Mm-hmm. And I think if I was to work the job that I'm doing now, because I'm working on is doing health and safety for nuclear sites and petrochemical sites, so for me, I don't really have the option to do that, then plus run a gym full time, plus train fighters, plus take time with my family. I can't really commit to all those at the same time. So if things change in the future, may well think about it. I've thought about promoting as well before, but I've seen so many people losing money from fight shows and people pulling out. I think if I was to get a fighter to pull out for a really shit reason, I would just go out in his house and just kick his cunt. I'm only joking, but not really.
That's on the record now. You only go on your fucking shows. This could be a good basis for you starting a show now that, you know, you've thrown down that gauntlet.
I never really understand it when people say, oh, the guy's pulled out. Oh, sorry, there's two sides to that, actually. The promoters will say, oh, the fighter's pulled out. Why? all work commitments. Like, for me, if it was to run a show, I would have to get the agreement from the coach of that fighter, saying, right, is he going to fight? Yes. What way is he going to fight at? Confirm the purse there and there, and then basically say, right, I want to speak to him on the phone. Go on the phone and speak to him and basically say, look, if there's any, for any reason you can't fight or there's a problem, you let me know as soon as that happens, okay? Don't wait for a few days. Because I know there's fighters out there who will have no intention, who will agree to fight, and then about a week later will go, ah, I don't really feel like fighting. But they won't tell their coach. Then maybe a few days later they'll tell their coach. Then maybe a few days later the coach will tell the promoter. So if the promoter had known that the week before, he could have sorted the match.
Yeah.
But because they didn't know, it's just been left. And fighters don't really feel any obligation because there is no direct relationship with the promoter. They maybe never met, never spoken. So they're pulling out of a fight that they don't even know who's running it, so they don't really care. Unfortunately, with Muay Thai, more so, I would say MMA these days, but with Muay Thai as well, you get so many people. You still get loads of pullouts in Muay Thai, probably more so now than you did 5-6 years ago. People are pulling out all the time for ridiculous reasons. But with MMA, you get a lot of guys who'll come into the gym now and they want to be Conor McGregor. They want the accolades, they want the plaudits, they want to be a superstar, they want all the attention that goes with that, they want the social media following, they want everybody to think they're great.
Yeah.
So they'll buy the shorts, the Yokow shorts that are in fashion right now, they'll look cool and they'll put a post of them, you know, with all their stuff on, and it's like that isn't fighting. And then all of a sudden they will pull out of a first fight and they'll pull out of another fight and they'll have another fight and they'll get beat and they'll blame it on some fucking ridiculous reason. But really the majority of them just can't take a dig. And unfortunately when it comes to fighting, if you want to do it well, or at all actually, is you need to be able to take a dig. You need to have grit about you. You need to not care about being hit to a certain extent. You have to have some sort of disregard for your body. And be prepared to do more than the other person's prepared to do if you want to win. If you're not doing unnatural talent, which is quite hard to come by, most people who are really good these days have worked damn hard to get there, and there's a lot of work that goes into that that people don't see. All you're seeing is the very end product of the win on that day. You're not seeing the missed family days out, the lack of food, the arguments with the girlfriend, boyfriend, the times when they have to get up really early and run before work, then going to work being hungry all day and having your colleagues sitting there eating biscuits and croissants and stuff, and then you've got to finish work and you've got to go to the gym for 2 or 3 hours, then you might get a couple of injuries throughout that 6-7 weeks.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day you go to you cut your weight, you get to the fight day, you go in the best of intentions, and then you get hit with something because there's so many variables in Muay Thai. You might say fighter A is definitely better than fighter B, but on the day, if fighter B lands that shot, and it's not a lucky shot because he's been training for the fight,
yeah,
there isn't really much. You get too many variables to equate for everything. But if he throws that at the right time and connects, then fighter A is going down, might go down, and all that hard work is gone.
Yeah,
you know. And the weird thing about fighting is, regardless of what I feel, people might disagree, but I feel when you win or lose, you feel a kind of nothingness after, like the day after the fight, because your past, especially here, your past 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 weeks has been building up to that fight.
Yeah.
So if you lose, you feel like totally deflated. It's just the worst feeling in the world, and there's nothing anybody can say that will make it any better. If you win, you feel really great for about 24 hours, then you sit there going,
right, what do I do now, sort of?
What do I do now? Where do I go now? What's the next thing? What's the next challenge? Is that going to be as satisfying as this?
Mm-hmm.
Has this all been worth it, this past 2 months of sacrifice? Is it really as much as means to me as much as I think it does?
Yeah, then you've
left your head just totally spinning around.
Then you've got that starts making you depressed because you start getting fat.
Yeah.
And you're like, right, I need to get back in the gym. And yeah, it's a big head fuck, like, is it?
You spend that week thinking, right, because your whole fight camp, all you're thinking about is how good the food is going to taste. Never tastes as good as you think it's going to taste. When you get it, never. You think it's going to be great. You can even plan out what beers am I going to have. I tell you what, how about I plan out exactly what I'm going to eat every single cake in advance. I'm going to have that cake first, then that cake. Oh, that biscuit. I love that biscuit. I'll have that biscuit as well.
I used to walk down the aisles in Asda and just look at stuff.
Yeah.
Like the week leading up to a fight, just used to look at it. Remember, like, fighting like near Easter time, that's what happened a few times. I used to walk down the Easter egg aisle a heap of times. Like, just tormenting myself before a fight. Thinking, yep, that one.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what restaurant am I going to? I'm going to really enjoy that. I'm going to have that on a Friday and a Saturday. You end up with nothing. You end up being a complete cabbage for a week. Just eating shite, Space Raiders and hot noodles and stuff. So yeah, it's a weird head fuck. And it's something that takes a bit of time to get used to. But the guys who are coming through, there is some really good individual fighters coming through, and they are, even the guys who are C class moving to B classes, some of them who are just at an exceptional level, really good. Their knowledge of Muay Thai is a lot better. The people they're training with are a lot better. I think that's what separates people who came through my sort of stage 15 years ago. God, when I say that, I sound old as fuck.
Well, you are.
Aye. Fuck hell. 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there wasn't really those great people to work with. You had to go to Thailand for that.
Yeah.
And even back then, you had to go to a decent gym and be accepted by the Thais to get in and get that knowledge. But now you've got guys coming back from Thailand with that knowledge. There's more information being shared throughout the sport and in all different countries. And the guys in the gym in the UK have now got more access to better quality training partners, better equipment, better experienced people to come in and show them how to do better.
Yeah.
And they've got more knowledge. So it's almost streamlining it. And it's what I'm trying to do with the seminars and stuff, about the judging and the refereeing, is that if you know how to score a fight and you know what to look for, what the judges are looking for, then it streamlines what you do when you train.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not wasting time practicing stuff that doesn't score. All you're doing is training it, making it automatic in your head, how to score, what scores, when should I score, when should I hit, how should I hit, how should I apply, what to do if this happens, what to do if that happens. And you're looking to basically maximize your potential during a fight, you know. That's all Muay Thai is. It's a more effective form of violence than street fighting, because it works. It really does work. Mm-hmm. It's been demonstrated all over the time. And if you follow what's the training from your coach has got good knowledge and good experience, and you've got good training partners around you who've also got good training, good knowledge and experience, then you can't help but do well if you've got that motivation and grit. But you have to have the grit. I've seen a lot of fighters with great technique, great knowledge about the sport, but when it comes to actually taking a punch in the face, it just goes, everything goes out the window.
Yeah.
They just either fold or they just don't perform the way they do in training, because they're used to that environment. They're used to the training environment. They're not used to the fighting environment. It doesn't sit well with their mindset or whatever. And they just fold and they don't perform as well as you think they do. But you get some fighters who will just work damn hard, and when they get in that ring, they just like come alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that separates who's going to be good and who's going to be bad, generally, or who's going to keep going to that next level.
Yeah. Do you think there's a transitional period for like most people from going like your first couple of fights, going from that sort of training environment and that fighting environment and getting used to it? Like you said, you hated your first fight. Do you think it takes like a little while to get used to that environment?
Yeah, definitely. It depends how quickly you change, and that's really up to the individual, I think. Some people adapt quite quickly, some take a bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
But it all depends how much you want it, what your motivation is, and what people's motivation for doing the sport is a lot different. There's quite a weird mix of people doing the sport for whatever reason. Each person's reason for doing the sport will be different than the others. But there is a transitional period where you're basically having to get used to that environment of being hit and being hit hard by somebody who doesn't know you. And I think what it comes down to is it's how quickly you can transition from making the uncomfortable feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And once it starts to feel comfortable, then you start to feel fine about it.
Yeah.
Getting hit is nothing, absolutely nothing. People are like, well, that must have really hurt. Every single one of my fights, barred my last fight, don't feel a single thing. Even got a nose broke, didn't feel it. Got my rib broke, didn't feel it. What else did I get broke? Ears, cauliflower, elbows, cut open. Didn't really feel any pain at the time. Cheekbone cracked. Didn't really feel the pain at the time. It's only a good few hours after you start to feel the pain, but it's not as much. Whereas my last fight, that's when I knew things had changed for me. Was I felt like every kick, every punch, every time the guy hit me, I felt like just I'd been hit by a baseball bat, and that's when I knew that I shouldn't be fighting.
Okay. What do you think it was that made it feel made it change for you?
I think my daughter being born. I think for me before that, it was Muay Thai is a selfish sport. You have to be selfish to do Muay Thai. You have to think about yourself.
Mm.
You can't think about anyone else because your coach, your girlfriend isn't a jump in for you. They're round three and help you out, you know. You have to be selfish, you have to put the time in training. If you want to be good at it, you have to put the time in and do the training, do the road work, do the clinching, do the sparring, hit the pads, do the strength and conditioning. And it's a lot of time. It's a lot of time and effort to keep climbing and getting better. Whereas my daughter was born, my priorities changed. I remember being at the gym, hitting pads and thinking, right, okay, if I hit, I've got another 2 rounds of pads to go. Once I've done that, I'll then do a couple of press-ups and a couple of sit-ups, and then I can get out of here by 15:15, showered by 20:20, back home, say 10:50. And all I was thinking about is I want to get home and see my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get back. I don't really want to be here. And for me, everything just changed. My priorities had gone from training and being the best fighter I could to I want to get home and be a dad. And I never really accepted it at the time. Even the last two fights, I never really accepted what that was. That was me. I just wanted to keep training, keep fighting, and I did. But the overriding responsibilities I felt were sitting there, and I was trying to push them down and not accept that I was kind of past it. Physically, I was still fine. I just mentally, I was my head wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the way to be. I didn't feel that clench that I want to hurt this guy.
Yeah.
I got in the ring, and 10 seconds after I got in the ring, I was like, I can't be arsed. I just cannot be arsed in this. And that's when I knew that it's time to go. So I thought, all I'll do is try and see it the 5 rounds, and then just call it a day. And that was it, done.
Yeah.
And I've never had that drive come back. If it does come back, I may well take a fight, but it's very unlikely it will come back. I've got other things I want to do now, other things that I feel are important for me. The judging and refereeing. The refereeing I really enjoy, because I predominantly took it on because the referee in Scotland took a heck of a nosedive when WBC came in to Scotland. Not because of what WBC is. WBC is a great organisation. The people who are involved at WBC at a world level are really good, and WBC titles are great to have.
Mm.
Unfortunately, people who implemented the rule system and implemented it and represented it in Scotland were destroying the sport. They were just bastardizing it and changing it from Thai scoring to some form that they didn't even understand themselves, because they couldn't tell anybody, they couldn't teach anybody how to do it because they didn't understand the scoring system they were trying to implement, which nobody else, no other countries had actually implemented the system. They'd just done it themselves, and the people they got to do it didn't even understand what they're looking for as well, which led to a huge amount of problems and issues with the scores that were released and how the fights went. People were just not happy because they had trained Thai boxing, they had trained how to score, they learned the rules, and they'd lost a fight, they didn't understand how they lost, even though they thought they were fighting under Thai systems. And then you'd have a judge who'd be judging a Muay Thai fight, and the next fight was WBC, so then having to flip their mindset from Thai scoring to WBC scoring, it cannot be done.
What was WBC scoring more like? It was strike sort of.
Good fucking question. Nobody really still knows. It's meant to be that all scores, all strikes score the same, but in Muay Thai, all strikes do score the same if they show effect.
Mm-hmm.
So if you punch somebody's head and it flips right back, that scores because it's showing effect. If you body kick somebody and they move, that's showing effect. All things being equal in Muay Thai, the kick is king. You know, if there is no effect shown, then the kick lands, that scores higher than a punch if neither of them show effect. So if you punch me, I don't move, but then I body kick you back, I win.
Yeah.
That exchange. And WBC, they want everything to score the same. Each round has to be scored a 10-9. It can't be a 10-10. The 10 asterisks or star had to be taken out. The people who were doing it and trying to score it didn't really understand it either. There is a written system for WBC online, but it's not really followed internationally. In Australia, they have a great WBC presence. Thailand, France, Europe, they all WBC, but it's all scored Thai style. Which is how everything kind of should be within Thai boxing when it comes to their Muay Thai. And it's how WBC is now in Scotland since some things have changed. But the WBC national belts, or Scottish belts, took a major hit to their credentials because of what was happening, and nobody wanted to fight for them because they were seen as a very nice belt before because of what boxing, the credentials boxing had brought to it. But nobody wanted to fight for it because they didn't understand the scoring, and even the judges didn't understand the scoring.
Yeah, so just a bit of a watery, kind of, unless someone gets knocked
out.
Yeah,
it was just, you had to knock a person out to know you'd won the fight.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have a clue if you won the fight. Whereas now it's kind of going back to Thai scoring, which is a good move, and hopefully means WBC will become more popular and be the belt to have. Whereas at the moment in Scotland, there isn't a single fucking belt worth having.
Things we were talking about that last night, Stevie, likes a WC belt's been fighting, been fought for in Lumpini, and there's no way they're fighting like dodgy rules like that, are they? They'll be fighting Thai, proper Thai rules, you know what I mean? They should be doing that all the time, should they?
I remember watching, was it Fabio Pinca? Was it Fabio Pinca fought Bovi or somebody? Or Superbond for a WBC? World title in France, and it was Thai scoring. Even with elbow pads on, it was still Thai scoring.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to somebody fighting in Glasgow for the WBC national belt,
it changed.
It just, you get somebody who just threw a flurry of 40 punches and they won that round. That's just nonsense.
No, that's the if it's Muay Thai, it should be Muay Thai scoring. That's the bottom line, should it?
Yeah. And a lot of what happened with Muay Thai in the early days, and even up till a couple of years ago, was the people who were involved in the sport had been here for so long. They haven't really done very much for the sport. They've maybe increased their numbers in the gyms and stuff, but they haven't actually made it any better. It's the people who are going to Thailand who are bringing the knowledge back and bringing this in. But there's a lot of resistance to that. There's a lot of resistance to that change because the old people didn't understand it. They weren't prepared to learn. They weren't prepared to become better and more knowledgeable about it. They just wanted to do what they'd always done. And they can resist it a lot of change, whereas now there's a good, I would say we've probably got about 8 to 10 very competent judges in Scotland who will judge Muay Thai properly. Mm-hmm. If I'm judging or refereeing a show, I'll always choose the judges, or if the promoter has chosen one of the judges, then I will only referee the show if I know that judge is a good judge. I won't take any of their crap. And unfortunately, what prompted me to do this judging was my fight against Raven Sterling, where one judge judged it to me by three rounds. The two other judges judged it to him by three rounds. Now that's a 6-point variance. There's only five fucking rounds in a fight. So something was seriously wrong with those two. And they've now actually retired from judging because nobody wants to use them. They had a serious lack of understanding about what the sport was, and didn't know what they were doing, really. And I didn't even know they were both judging my fight. And I lost £500 in a side bet for that. The promoter handed it straight over to the fighter. I told him not to, but he still did it anyway. Which kind of pissed me off. So I may have pissed him off on Facebook, but he fucking deserved it.
they got a name and a name, Steve.
I didn't know who they are. But so that really infuriated me, that I had spent 8 weeks of my life training my ass off, losing lots of weight, missing out on events, having the times when you're really close to fight where you're tired, you're narky, you're frustrated, having to go through all that and all the training, losing the overtime at work to simply make weight and make myself the best I can be for that fight. Yeah, I fought kind of shit the first two rounds because I ended up getting my head cut open a couple of times, but I still clearly won the fight. And then after that fight, 4 to 5 of the best judges in the UK came out and said I won that by 2-3 rounds, easy. And it still wasn't overturned because there was no sanctioning body. The judges that were there weren't competent to do their job. And that really pissed me off. And I thought, if that can happen for my fight, it's going to happen again. The promoters are going to keep using their friends, keep using these people who don't know what they're doing. And for the sport to grow, that's not going to help the sport grow. I'm not interested in making lots of money from Muay Thai. If I wanted to make money from it, I make money from my job. I don't make money from Muay Thai. I do it because I enjoy it. And for me to see more and more young guys come through, a lot of them get disillusioned with the sport is because they don't know why they're losing fights. Yeah. You know. So doing the seminars and the refereeing was a sort of natural move on from that. It would allow me to educate more people in Scotland on what's going on. So these old guys who weren't getting the times, who weren't moving on, they weren't wanting to adapt, they would be found out. If there was people wanting shows and they wanted the best judges on it, there'd be certain fighters who were going, we won't fight in that show unless he's judging or he's refereeing on it. And they were asking for me to be refereeing on that show. So that was good, because they knew that, because then they will know that if I'm refereeing, I'll do it properly.
Yeah.
To the standards that they expect, and I'll be putting in judges into that show that are of a good standard.
What were the main issues with the refereeing?
Clinch
getting broken up too quickly, or
clinch broken up too quickly, clinch going on too long, fouls not being picked up, referee being way too far away from the actual fighters and not responding quickly enough, and generally not knowing what his role is in the fight. You are there to make sure both the fighters are safe, you're there to make sure the rules are followed, and you're there to give warning to the fighters if they are fouling, and to make sure the fight is followed the way it should be under the Muay Thai rule set. The judges are there as the gatekeepers to the sport, and the referee to a certain extent as well. Is if they're not following what should be done, why should the fighters? You're setting an example to these guys. So for me, it was basically, we need to set an example. We need to show a certain standard for the Muay Thai, for the fighters to adhere to. And if we show them exactly what we're doing, along with the seminars, then it's more like we're going to increase that level of the standard of fighters that are coming through. Some of the older guys that were doing it had never done an assessment. They just simply started doing interclubs. They were friends with the promoter. And all of a sudden, the promoter put him on his show. And he recommended to another promoter, I'll put him on your show, give him a job refereeing on your show. Some of the guys are terrible. Jim Walton, very good referee, is now retired. He sometimes does a couple of shows every so often, but he was really good. I took a lot of advice and knowledge from him about how to be a good referee and how to judge properly as well. And Neil Ross, another good referee, and judge as well. So myself and Neil do a lot of the judging, and he does refereeing as well, more so judging. And we kind of make sure that all the judges are, and the shows are happening in Scotland, have proper judges. And there is times before where we've had maybe two other judges who have been not as good as they should be. I wouldn't say good, but more favourable towards certain gyms.
Okay.
And there's been times where that those two judges have judged towards another fighter who lost the fight, clearly lost the fight, but they've judged it towards him. So as the head judge, I put Neil as the head judge, and if he believes it, and I believe it as well, we overturn their two decisions.
Mm-hmm. You can do that as...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the head judge and the referee believe that the other two judges have got it wrong through whatever bias they have, then you can overturn his decision and award it in the favour of the person you think's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, the head judge...
That's why they've called the head judge.
Yeah, so they can... If their scorecard, they believe a fighter won, but all other judges think the other one done, the head judge's card could be the one they go by.
Yeah, only if the referee agrees.
Okay.
There has been a time when I've been refereeing through UKMF and the head judge actually believed the other two judges gave it to the blue corner.
Mm-hmm.
The head judge gave it to the red corner. And he said, I don't agree with those two scores. I said, well,
new refs.
Yeah, I said, well, sorry, I do. I want to keep that as it is. So
okay.
That became 3-1. So
okay.
3-1 wins.
But if you agreed with the head judge, then
if
you
agreed with the head judge, yeah. Yeah. That's
and that happened before the obviously decision's been made.
Yeah. Yeah. You just simply say these two judges have got it wrong. And it happens. It happens sometimes.
It's good though that, I mean, but it just shows as well how, from obviously, well, it could be a lot of people, like you're saying, bias and that, but sometimes it's different for your setting as well, different views of the fight as well, is it?
Yeah, different views. I mean, generally, you'll always get the red corner.
As you were telling me about before about Shoney's putting.
Yeah.
The red corner will be the home team. So say, like, what the home team's got their fighter in the red corner. Blue corner is away team. And there'll be four sides to the ring, but two of the sides nearest the home corner will be where the judges sit, so the judge can actually be influenced
by the cheers and
the cheers and the oh, that was nothing, whatever, if the opponent throws a good strike, or no problem, keep going, that was easy. Hear all the influence from the corner team of the home fighter. So when you go into shows, watch that, you'll see the home fighters will always have the two judges on your side.
You tell me that, I've actually forgot the leak since you told me to say that.
But now I think things are a lot better when it comes, there's a lot more consistency with the judging from that over the past couple of years. I can't think of a time or a fight in Scotland that I've been part of the judging or the officials for that event where somebody has complained to me about the scoring of a fight. I've had people come up and speak to me and say, look, how do you think that fight went? If I've been refereeing, people have come, how do you think that fight went? Well, I think blue. I think my fighter in the red won. And I say, all right, well, let's speak to the judges. And that, as a judge, is your main thing. If you ever get questioned on a fight, you can't just go, I gave that decision. You know, just forget about it. You have to be able to justify why you've given blue corner the win or red corner the win. You have to be able to say red won because better knees, better effective aggression, better ring generalship, commanded the ring, maintained position, and scored better with their straight knees or their body kicks. If you go back and go, just accept the decision, that's not how things go. That's how the old style guys want things to be. Just let it go, it'll be fine, doesn't matter. Nah, fuck that. You need to complain.
What did it, just in general, what did Muay Thai look like before, when it was sort of random? People didn't have the same knowledge.
Could be whoever was sitting in the judge's chair. There was still a good few judges back then, but you would never know, because it could be one judge who knew they were talking about to a certain extent. But even the judges nowadays have a lot more knowledge than judges back then. But you could have two judges from the promoter's gym or the guy you're fighting's gym.
Okay.
You wouldn't know because you never question it. Whereas now you'll get fighters going, who's judging in that show? Nah, I'm not fighting that because I know this guy's shit, that guy's shit. He doesn't like me or just whatever. There's a lot of fractions in Muay Thai. So what you'll get now is promoters want to make sure that they've got a good referee and three good judges on their show and all the fighters are happy with it.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it was simply a case of whoever's in the crowd. There is still some shows that those pick two guys out of the crowd or three guys out of the crowd.
Okay, thanks for listening to part one. Part two will be out in a couple of days or tomorrow. I mean, I don't have that much to do to it. I can get out to you pretty quick if you want. The thing with two-part podcasts I find quite a lot is, and I've heard from other people that release podcasts, that there's always a drop-off between part one and part two. It's quite frustrating when you're someone that is putting out podcasts to see that, especially, I mean, sometimes I think the second half is sometimes even better than the first part, purely because the conversation is even more kind of loose and natural by then. Sometimes when there's ones that involve heavy drinking, part two is almost a ridiculous idea to put out and should never really be listened to, and I'm almost hoping people don't listen to it. But this podcast is not one of those occasions. Part two, I think, is really good, and as Stephen talks a lot about what Muay Thai has done for his mental health and just kind of talks about what the sport can do for you, or what, yeah, he just gives a really a good account of that side of things, and also tells some quite cool stories from his time in Thailand, and some big fights he had and some little funny stories surrounding that. So if you've enjoyed part one, definitely come back for part two, because it's more of the same, and there's some stuff in there that I think is really invaluable in terms of the whole episode. I just want to finish up by saying that there's been a lot said on online stuff about mental health this past week, especially in the Aberdeen area. I know, unfortunately, I'm really sad to hear a few guys have taken their own lives in the Aberdeen area for the past week as well. And although I like to have like a laugh on this podcast, and it is it's meant to be humorous as well as helpful, it's been a tough week for me seeing all this going on, and just wanted to say that although this podcast is, like I say, out there for entertainment, I guess, but also just to reiterate that like it really is important that people look after each other and check up on your friends, because yeah, it isn't all having a laugh on podcasts. It's the much more serious side to these things. If you follow me on social media, you'll see I did my mental health first aid course last week, which was a really good course. If anyone is interested in doing that, give me a shout. I had a look at some links and stuff, and I can maybe point you in the right direction for doing that. And that's a really good thing to do. Or if anyone just wants some advice, or you know, if anyone's really feels like they need to chat, you can fire me a message on all social medias, Instagrams, Mood Swings Abs, Facebook, 365 Aberdeen, and the same with Twitter. And I can point you in the right direction for services I've used in Aberdeen to help with mental health, or I can just chat to you, or I can point you in the direction of services maybe I haven't used myself but I've heard are good. But I just I just want to say that at the end of this podcast, that make sure that everyone's talking to each other and looking after each other, and if you're feeling really low, please try and speak to someone, and even if it is dropping the idiotic podcast guy a message on Instagram, then if that's what you want to do, then please feel free. Anyway, part two will be out in a couple of days, and I really hope you've enjoyed this part, and thanks for listening right to the end. Cheers. Bye.